This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by American Crawl Space and Pest Services. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
The incompetence is very high over at the Seattle City Council. They are so incompetent. Even when they protest banks, they end up failing. So a few months ago, this happened mid-February or so, the Seattle City Council said they'd stop doing business with the bank Wells Fargo. They voted 9-0 to get rid of their contract with Wells Fargo. And at the time, they said, we're doing this because they do not reflect our values, particularly on environmentalism. The bank Wells Fargo invested in the Dakota Access Pipeline, or they provide funding to the company that ended up going through with the Dakota Access Pipeline. And so the council said, this is absurd, this is disgusting. We do not want to do business with a company as immoral as Wells Fargo. They just re-upped their contract with Wells Fargo for several more years. And the reason is kind of hysterical. No one wanted to do business with the Seattle city government. Did you see that? No one wanted to do business. No one would have them. That, I have to assume, is a slap in the face, right? I mean, I get that when you're dealing with city governments and the bureaucracy, it can be a little bit cumbersome. But a city the size of Seattle has a lot of money, which means the banks will be doing a lot of business and profiting pretty significantly from it.
You'd think so. I mean, and then the follow-up question to me is, then why would Wells Fargo even want to do, like, if they're that toxic, why is Wells Fargo even taking them back?
I don't think that it's that they're toxic to a company that's already profiting. So if I was profiting off of a company that just called me out, I will happily cash those checks. Oh yeah, we're so bad. Thanks for that $1 million in revenue last year, or whatever it happens to be. I would happily do that. And Wells Fargo doesn't want to get into the business of policing the politics of every company that they do business with, because that's a lose-lose for them. Wells Fargo is there to bank with people regardless of their political positions, right? I mean, they're trying to be apolitical. That's how most businesses are. Amazon doesn't care that someone who's a Republican buys from them. Same thing with Apple and Samsung and, like, name any business. Unless they're inherently political, they don't care about the political beliefs. They don't care that, let's say the ownership of a certain company hates Republicans. Well, they keep that to themselves. They don't say only Democrats allowed. And so that's basically what's happening here. What I find particularly interesting, because I suppose one could say for Wells Fargo, we've already committed all of this energy and all these resources in creating the infrastructure that is necessary to make something like this work. Because again, it is rather complicated. The city of Seattle, and this is where the slap of the face comes from, they split their services and their budgets into a whole bunch of different contracts. And they did it because then it would be easier to attract smaller banks like some of the local banks. And still no one took them. Glenn Lee, the city finance director, told the Seattle Times, it became clear this was our best and only course of action. And I think this is important to understand. This is what they do. This is what Seattle does. They take a symbolic vote before doing any of the research. What happened with the head tax? They voted on the head tax. They voted on millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars targeting businesses before they even fleshed out a plan to spend the money. And that's what they did here. They wanted to show a symbolic gesture of solidarity with the protesters who were going up against Wells Fargo at the time. They took that position before they did any research into whether or not they would be able to move to a different bank, or if anyone else wanted them. And then lo and behold, they find out, I guess we put the cart before the horse. Yeah, it doesn't work like that, folks. It doesn't work like that. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
Yesterday was another big primary day with voters taking to the polls in Pennsylvania, Oregon, Nebraska, and Idaho. Joining me with the results and the implications, Fox News Radio's Rachel Sutherland. Rachel, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Jason.
So let's start in Pennsylvania. There was a court-ordered redistricting, which made predictions a little bit difficult. The thinking was Democrats would benefit from it. What were the results last night?
Well, the redistricting, yeah, did shock a lot of people. Actually, the state Supreme Court kind of ripped up the congressional map. It said it was gerrymandered in favor of Republicans and redrew it. The justices actually drew their own map, re-jiggering the whole thing. So as far as primaries are concerned, the impact is that it was a bit confusing. Remember Connor Lamb? He won his primary, or won, I should say, the special election, Democrat there. Now he's running in an entirely different district. He ran unopposed last night, so not that big of a deal for him, but it will make a difference in the fall. So really, the redistricting impacting things in the fall. But you'll see the basic trends with the primary seem to be holding up, that the ones that are aligning themselves with President Trump do well. Representative Lou Barletta won the GOP primary in Pennsylvania for Senate. He'll take on two-term Democrat Senator Bob Casey in the fall. Not sure if he really stands a chance there, because Casey is pretty popular. But also you see Deb Fischer in Nebraska winning her GOP primary. And she is someone, I believe the president even endorsed her on Twitter. So you're seeing these candidates that are benefiting from President Trump on the Republican side. But you see different trends on the other side, and that Democrats, by and large, seem to be electing people who are farther to left or more progressive. They're rejecting more moderate Democrats, particularly in Pennsylvania. I think they're trying to really go farther to the left to push forward what they perceive to be a blue wave coming in the fall. But I mean, I'm not so sure. If they put up really kind of extreme candidates, it may not work out for them very well. Bernie Sanders didn't do so well, obviously, a couple of years ago, because he was just too far left for people to be able to vote for him. So again, you're seeing this polarization.
It seems risky, especially when you look at Pennsylvania, where the thinking was that President Trump was not going to have as much strength in the midterms. And all of a sudden you look at some of these races and you're like, no, it's surprising strength for the president.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that Pennsylvania is going to be one of those states that it was obviously key in President Trump's victory, and could be key in the fall when you're looking at any kind of holding on mm-hmm. of power or change of power. I think most analysts are looking at the Senate and thinking it's fairly safe for Republicans. I think if there is going to be any kind of blue wave, the conventional wisdom right now is it would be in the House. But as far as these races are shaping up so far, it seems that President Trump still has a lot of influence. I mean, truly, you saw that in the midterms of the week before, that the candidates that President Trump either liked or didn't like, you look in West Virginia, where that coal mogul who did time mm-hmm. in jail lost after the day after the president tweeted, you know, stay away from Blankenship, he lost. So it's still a powerful pulpit that the president has, and I think that some of these candidates that if they want to do well on the Republican side, they're going to be lining up with President Trump.
Well, we also go to Idaho. Not a lot going on, although a lot of folks were looking at the first congressional district just because it was incredibly crowded.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, some of these races out there maybe didn't get the kind of attention that others did, but it looks like at this point, I don't know. Let's see, have they even gotten the final results for this? It looks like Fulcher wins that mm-hmm. in the Republican nomination side. Unfortunately, there's just so many races. Some of these just didn't get the attention. When I was doing the prep for these races ahead of time, there was just a dearth of information. Yeah, you just couldn't find the coverage, and I was a little surprised about that.
There's just a lot going on and just not a lot of resources. Oregon, you know, we look towards Oregon's not really going to ever turn red, but every once in a while you see a competitor for governor going up. This time against Kate Brown is going to be State Representative Newt Bowler. Is there any indication that he's got a shot?
Yeah, you know, I don't know about that one. I mean, perhaps. I think it may be just too soon to tell on that. Oregon, as you say, I mean, the idea of that going red, that's just not going to happen anytime soon.
Well, they join us in the Pacific Northwest staying blue. I've been talking with Rachel Sutherland from Fox News Radio. For more up-to-date implications, analysis, and results on a whole bunch of races that happened yesterday, because obviously we weren't able to touch on all of them, check out foxnews.com. Rachel Sutherland, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks.
You're listening to The Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH. If you want to join the conversation, you can send me a text message, 1-800-465-8770. That's the number better tax resolution hotline, 1-800-465-8770. 800-770-8770. And of course, you can hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show. Live in the online, live in the, I'm all over the, this is your fault.
Ow, why?
Did you bring me my coffee this morning?
I've never done that.
Well, maybe that. Well, maybe it's now starting to catch up to you.
Yes,
I'm a little flummoxed this morning. Maybe if you started when you got here every day, getting into the habit of bringing me coffee just to perk me up, I wouldn't be screwing up. It's the Online Trading Academy studio. My name is Jason. That's Jacob. Hello. Thank you so much for tuning in. I've been a little annoyed. I think part of the reason I'm flummoxed this morning is over the last commercial break. I've just been looking at some of the updates coming out of Israel and the conflict at the Gaza border, where Hamas terrorists have been trying to get over the border and use human shields as they lob over Molotov cocktails and throw other bombs and fly kites that are on fire to start wildfires successfully, by the way, in Israel. I've been reading and I've been getting more and more annoyed because it seems very clear to me that there are a lot of voices out there in the U.S. media that are upset that not enough Jews died. They seem angry that Israelis did not die as they defend themselves. And I'm looking right now at a tweet from a guy named Damon Linker. He's the senior correspondent at The Week. This is a tweet that he sent because now the death toll at the border was 60 Palestinians. We'll get into who those people actually are, but just this is foreshadowing slash an obvious hint. They're terrorists. But this is the tweet. When people on both sides die, it's a battle. When people on only one side die, it's a massacre, even when Jews do it. Listen, you little anti-Semitic piece of human trash, Damon Linker. You don't know what it is you're talking about. I understand that you're upset that enough Jews did not die in defending their land, but you disgusting, shameful human being, you. How dare you say something like this? You know what we found out last night of the 60 who died? 50 were Hamas. 58 people died. 50 of them were Hamas terrorists. 50. Now, you didn't really get that in the media, did you? But if you went overseas and you looked it up, and you looked at the actual interviews, in this case with a Hamas leader, a senior Hamas official, his name is Salah Al-Bardwil. He did an interview in which he acknowledges 50 of the dead were members of Hamas, that terrorist organization that wants to see the end of Israel as we know it, that wants to wipe the earth of the Jewish plight. Those are the ones who died. And then just moments ago in the Washington Post, they updated a story. They updated a fact that was thrown out there as Hamas propaganda that was being used by the U.S. media members here to go after Israel. Did you see that report yesterday or the day before that a baby that was there at one of these protests died from tear gas that was used? And they showed images of this poor child dead and the mother holding it and crying, and it was used as a means to go after Jews in Israel. Well, apparently, according to the Associated Press, talking with a doctor there, the baby, whose name it was Lila Gabin, had a pre-existing medical condition in that he did not think her death was caused by tear gas. Now, that story, those images, aren't going to be corrected. You'll get maybe a throwaway line in a story or two, but the damage has already been done. You know what I call it when a country doesn't lose anyone in a conflict? The winners. The better of the two. I'm glad that Israelis didn't die in defending their country because they're on the right side of history. They're the noble ones. They're the victims here, not the terrorists who are being killed. That's being ignored. Israel is the victims. They've got a bunch of terrorists trying to get onto their land to destroy their land on the anniversary celebrations on the Palestinian side of the catastrophe, in their views, of the founding of Israel. It's rather telling when you see which side the media is on. The allies, the Jews, or the terrorists of Hamas. Unfortunately, way too many media outlets in this country are siding with Hamas. It's the Jason Rantz Show. A traffic camera scam in Kent. A crazy man with a parrot in Everett. It's time for the big local, brought to you by Tulalip Resort Casino.
Kent, Olympia, Everett, Sammamish.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rant Show.
Sumner, Woodinville, Des Moines.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
So the media is very, very, very hyper-focused on the city of Seattle. What does that mean? It means they ignore all the important and interesting, and yeah, sometimes quirky stories happening all across the state of Washington. So weekday mornings, right here on the Jason Rant Show, 7:30, we do something called the Big Local, where we talk about you. We focus on your communities, and we ignore the city of Seattle. And this morning, we start in Kent, where Como reports the city has collected a record $1.2 million last year because of speeding drivers caught by school traffic cameras, which tells you, I think, this is less about safety than it is about a money grab. Kent police issued, they say, a total of 9,342 tickets to drivers caught speeding in four school zones last year. And I'm willing to bet that a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, you can get ticketed if you go 21 miles per hour in a 20 mile per hour school zone, even though that has no significant threat to a kid, right? I mean, 20 to 21, that's not going to do anything, but that won't stop them from hitting you with a $120 to $130 ticket. And they're getting more and more and more, because the thinking is, when you put up these cameras, what ends up happening? You take notice. Maybe there's a month where you didn't realize it was there. You see a spike in tickets, but then everyone learns their lessons. Everyone is looking and realizes that there are speeding cameras there, and then they correct their behavior. That's not what happened here. It got worse. And yet I'm told by Kent Police Chief Rafael Padilla, this is about street safety for kids. You know what the key here is to figuring out that this is not about actual kid safety?
How's that?
How many kids died?
Are you asking me? Did zero die?
Yeah. Because usually, I mean, and especially in a story like this, if kid anywhere gets hit by a speeding car, that's going to make it onto the news, right? It doesn't have to be specific to Kent or Tacoma. When that happens, that makes the news. And it should, because it's rare, but when it does happen, it's tragic. There have been no deaths or injuries that have been reported, and yet speeding has gone up. And so I'm told that we want to stop the speeding because it's dangerous to the kids. Now, in theory, it's a potential danger to the kids, but in reality, it has not actually come to fruition, thankfully. But what has come to fruition, you've got now $1.2 million more than you had prior to you putting up these cameras. It's not like I'm taking a position that you can go ahead and speed, and I want you to be a speed demon around schools. But you're being sold a problem that doesn't exist, and the solution just happens to benefit the people selling you the problem that doesn't exist. Isn't that a little bizarre? And is there not a little bit of a conflict? As much as I love police departments, all of them, Kent PD included, they're spending about $800,000 of the $1.2 million on new patrol vehicles for the cops. If the cops are the ones essentially administering the tickets, should they financially benefit from the tickets? Isn't there a conflict there? Give it to the school. If you're going to take the money, give it to the school, because we constantly hear about school districts being underfunded. They can't even afford pencils. Teachers have to buy pencils for the kids, and they got to bring their own toilet paper because they can't afford it, particularly in Kent. Why not just give the schools the money? How many times have we done stories over the last 2 months of the Kent school district being financially unstable and having some significant... They called for the superintendent to resign over the budgetary issues. So wouldn't you just give the $1.2 million equally to the schools in the district? Or maybe just pick us. How about this? Every month we pick one school. So it's kind of like a fun lotto game. Like, okay, January, we're going to give it to this school in the Kent School District. February, you get it. And then there's probably some chance like, oh God, I hope a lot of people speed today so that we get big money. Just have fun with it at least. But you can't tell me this is about street safety for kids when kids aren't being injured by a bunch of cars that are speeding more now than they were prior. Is that not... No one thinks that's weird, at least?
So that's the statistic, is that...
More people are driving and speeding than in years past. They've given more tickets now after fully implementing the system. They're giving away more tickets now.
Well, to me, that sounds
than they
like
were before.
Also a problem of just that tickets aren't an effective deterrent for speeding in general.
Maybe.
Apart from school zones, I'm curious if there's a better way to actually enforce these things.
Best way is just speed bumps.
Sure.
I mean, that's the best way to to get people to stop from speeding? Because you have to. Because most people realize that when you go 60 miles per hour over that really big speed bump, you're going to crash or significantly damage your vehicle. Mm-hmm. Those things work all the time. The little roundabouts don't work because they just speed going around the roundabout.
Well, I guess the point is that they don't, but they don't need you to be slow all the time. They only need you to be slow when the kids are around.
Okay. They need you to be slow all the time when you ask them, right? Wait.
What? How have we not invented?
All the time. They always say we err on the side of going slower.
How expensive are speed bumps that you can, that like come out of the ground only
That's
during
speed bumps usually. Oh, you mean like?
Yeah, just like that. You can put them down.
I don't think
or put
any exist.
Yeah,
not from a city. You mean? Wait, I'm trying to think where they.
Yeah.
You're talking about like private security,
maybe
where those pillars go up.
Yeah, but not those. But just things that people like. A little
I've never
speed
seen
bump
a
that rises out.
Speed
I know,
bump.
But it seems like there should be one. That's my new plan.
If the radio gig doesn't work out,
I can invent a new type of speed
bump. Indiegogo, retractable speed bumps, raising $2.7 billion. Meanwhile, Andrea Brown over at the Everett Herald, who's a columnist there, who I hate her and I like her at the same time. Like, I love to hate her. She was forced into another one of her lazy columns where she wonders.
Yeah, what was up with that?
That's the name of her. What's up with that? That's the name of her column. And this time, she talks about a guy who takes a parrot everywhere he goes. And this is the title and subtitle. This guy takes his parrot everywhere he goes in Everett. Rod Schaefer had Sally and Macaw on his shoulder for years, even while bicycling around town. So now she's just walking up to weird people and be like, what's up with that? I'd like to write about you. We've got a dude who walks around in our neighborhood. I see him walk by my office all the time.
Yeah.
He's just got a parrot. And you know what he is? He's a weird ass. And then we kind of move on. I've never felt the need to ask him about why he does this. He's got a pet. It's a parrot.
Mm-hmm.
It's an unconventional pet in a traditional way. We usually see people walking around with their dog or cat. We don't bat an eye. He's doing it with a parrot.
I'd still even bat an eye if there's a cat, if they're walking a cat.
There's
a person walking a cat over there.
Well, I've seen weirdly more people have leashes on their cats. It's very weird. But it's only weird because we don't see it all that often.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't walk a bird.
No.
So you just put the bird on your shoulder and you move on.
I suppose you could, but no one would enjoy it.
They're hopping around, the bird gets tired.
It's slow.
It's like, dude, I fly, you idiot. I'm not supposed to be walking around like this. It'd be funny if you've got like a leash and he's flying
yes.
like over you, but even then he's just
that's
like...
That's called a kite, I think.
Yes, it's a bird kite. But even then, I feel like you're going too slow for the bird, so it wouldn't be able to sustain itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it just perches on the shoulder. Why are we writing full-on feature columns about it?
Everett doesn't have that many. I mean, nobody
stories?
Has that many. But, well, I mean, kind of.
That's nonsense.
They've got stories, but I mean...
She's the worst. You want to hear how she wrote? She started off
sure.
this story. He's 57 and a hairy house painter with a boozy past. She's 27 and a feathered fowl with a sassy attitude. Man and Macaw have been a couple for 17 years. That's also kind of creepy the way she wrote that.
I think...
What's up with that?
What was up with that?
The bird is also going to outlive this man.
Do birds live a long time?
The estimate for these type of birds, they can't in captivity, they can live up to 74. And this guy does not seem like the healthy. He's already 50.
Because he's a hairy house painter with a boozy past.
Yeah. So this bird could live up to 50 more years. I really don't think this guy's going to last another 50.
Jeez, got Macaw.
I'm not trying to be mean.
Well, Rod, who apparently is on his deathbed, here he is explaining his parrot, Sally, and why she's always with him.
She goes everywhere with me.
Yeah, I know.
Even inside the grocery store. She goes, we went to McDonald's yesterday, hung out front. Got a good little crowd out there. And
I'm assuming he doesn't eat chicken sandwiches there yet. Right? Because then the bird is just like judging it.
Does this change your diet when you're this close with a bird?
And where else? We... just about go everywhere. We go the hair salon. We go, everybody stops us and pulls us out everywhere. Just goes, hey, Rod, how's it going? She's the conversation piece of the town, I suppose.
This is the other thing, is that he...
needy.
Yeah, he just likes attention. I think that's the other thing with all these bird people that walk around with birds. They're just like, which is fine.
Well, those are like the people who get who adopt significantly ugly dogs. They only do it because they want to be the center of attention. That's the only reason they do it. The one with like the tongue that's just dragging on the asphalt behind them. It's like a 14-foot long tongue, and the dog itself is only like 6 inches long. They just that's the only reason is for the attention. It's
people,
the owner.
But people legitimately like that. I think people when they see birds, do people like?
No one
birds?
Likes birds. Yeah. We shoo birds away.
I'm kind of creeped out by it, but particularly talking birds.
But what about a bird that's actually this guy's sponsor? Because he used to be an alcoholic until he got Sally, and now she keeps him on the mend.
Now that I stopped drinking, I barely come down. I just come down and say hi to the friends every now and again. And then I get to seeing everybody getting drunk, and I'm going, wow, did I used to act like that? Come home a little bit juiced up, and I'd come and try to reach in case. Come on, baby, give me a kiss. And ouch. Got a little vocabulary with her. She says, hey, baby. Every time I cover her up at night, she's all, hey, baby, step up. Hey,
hashtag
baby.
Me too.
Well, we don't want to go there. She's got quite a potty mouth, too.
What is the bird saying?
I also like that he acts like it's like she has a potty mouth. Like it's
you're
the only
it.
One that, yeah, she's the only, you're the only reason she knows words at all.
I can't help it. My bird is an anti-Semite, and she hates black people. Yeah. How, what, you taught it that?
Got kind of a potty mouth. What can you do?
He just all of a sudden started saying horrible words to women. Well, maybe because the bird's listening to you. Oh, God bless, Rod. We did get a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. Someone wrote in, to be fair to Andrea Brown, the column is a hit with readers, so editors say, do more of this, and at some point, you just run out of things to write about.
I click on What's Up With That every time.
Only because you've been taught to, so because it's become a bit on the show.
I also just know Parrot Guy and Everett's going to be something, especially when there's video. Get to hear what he has to say about himself.
Let me tell you something. He's not going to be anything. This guy's accomplishment in life is he walks around with a bird perched on his shoulder, and the only attention he's ever gotten in a legitimate way is from Andrea Brown, who constantly asks,
yeah, what was up with that?
And she's just at this point, she's desperate for stories.
And people on the street, they go up to him and they say, hey,
no
this?
One goes up
tell me about
to
your
him.
Bird.
That's a lie.
They You've gather around
have
him.
Have you seen
the,
anyone
the
go
the
up to
salon,
the our bird
says.
Guy? Have you no. ever seen anyone go up to our bird guy? Never. You know why? Because they're all freaks, and you don't know what they're going to do. Do birds have rabies? If they do, that's what I assume they have. They have bird flu. You go next to it, and it goes like, phew! It just sneezes on you, and then you get sick. It's Jason Rancho. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho, live in the Online Training Academy studio. STD cases continue to rise in Washington State. Over 43,000 cases of chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis in 2017. That's up from 2016 by 7%. And it's being driven primarily by millennial sex habits, because according to the data, it was released by the Washington Department of Health, chlamydia is the most commonly reported STD with the highest rates amongst women ages 20 to 24. Now, chlamydia generally impacts women more so than men. But then when you look at the dudes, they report the majority of the syphilis and gonorrhea cases. Nationally, all three of those diseases rise as well, and they have been rising for a while. They don't give any explanation, but it's kind of obvious, yeah? Number one, hookup apps, right? Tinder, Grindr, Hinge, all plenty of fish. What are the other ones that you used to be? Bumble?
Mm-hmm. You're saying Hinge.
Yeah, these are why people are getting more STD. I love people who generally talk about the changing habits or the changing views on sex. And yes, that was playing a role here. People are a little bit more comfortable than they were, let's say, in the 1950s. But let's be clear. If Tinder and Grindr existed in 1950, we'd have a steady flow of really high rates of STDs. I refuse to believe that the change in culture is responsible for this much of an impact in an increase in numbers. And it's funny because there's never been more education about safe sex than there is right now. You know, you go back to the 1950s or 1960s or 70s or 80s, we weren't having regular conversations about the importance of wearing condoms, right? We weren't getting that. We were getting very basic stuff, and that was it. But the education is out there, and yet the rise continues. Here's Dr. Christopher Baliga talking to Q13. He's an infectious disease specialist at Virginia Mason.
They feel fine, which means that not only are they infected with the potential health problems to themselves, but they're also out there living a normal life where they are able to spread it to other people. Anyone is at risk for getting any of these sexually transmitted infections.
Well, I mean, that part is demonstrably untrue. If you're not having sex, you're not going to get an STD, right? I mean, are we pretending that you're just walking around? How'd you get gonorrhea? I used a public bathroom. It's not how it works. How'd you get chlamydia? I went for a swim in the public pool.
That's, I mean, it happens, I think.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
No, yeah.
I got pregnant because I was in a jacuzzi and two other guys were there. That's it? Yeah.
But
millennials, not what I heard.
But millennials are actually having less sex than previous generations.
I don't know if that's true. I think it also depends on the definition of sex, and I think that's where some of those statistics come from. Because you can get some of these STDs without the traditional kind of sex that we used to clearly define as sex. There doesn't have to be intercourse. Why are you looking at me? What am
no,
I,
no,
you,
that seems.
Do I have to start the Dr. Rance hour of STD training?
It's interesting to
me. Let's talk
you
about the change in your body
in other,
right now.
And other
you're
sex
getting more
acts, but
hair
not
in places you didn't actually have before. Your skin is getting a little bit oily, and you've got these urges you can't control. But son, you can. You push them to the side and don't address them ever.
The reasons they say are like that they're like too obsessed with working.
They're liars. Because the group of people who are getting more STDs are aged 20 to 24. So they're lying to you.
Or there's a smaller group of irresponsible millennials that are ruining it for
everybody. A really small group of promiscuous, slutty men and women who are just sleeping with everything. And then and you know what? To be fair, also, it's possible. And I assume that there's a high recidivism rate. I don't know the answer for sure, but if maybe you get gonorrhea because of your habits and you treat it, you might get it again because you realize, oh, I just have to take penicillin or whatever it is for gonorrhea.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know the difference between all three of them. I know that pus is involved, and that's why I didn't want to Google it on our work computers.
Yeah, definitely don't do that.
Because I can't get that image out of my head. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. Time to get your work the right way with Right Way Traffic.